Good evening and welcome, and thank you for joining this telephone town hall. I'm Bill Boyce, Fire Chief here at the City of Brampton, and I'll be your moderator this evening. If you'd like to ask a question of any one of our experts, please press star 3 on your phone right now. Tonight we're going to be hearing from Alain Normand, our Community Emergency Management Coordinator with the City of Brampton in our Emergency Management Division, our Mayor, Patrick Brown, Dr. Lawrence Lowe, the Associate Medical Officer Health with the Region of Peel, Dr. Frank Martino, the Chief of Family Medicine at William Osler, Peel Regional Police Deputy Chief Randy Patrick, myself, Bill Boyce, the Fire Chief, City of Brampton, Deputy Chief Brian Gibson from Peel Regional Paramedic Services, along with members of our task forces that are on the Mayor's task forces that are on the line tonight. From our Social Support Task Force, we have Councillor Rowena Santos and Councillor Jeff Bowman. From our Seniors Support Task Force, Councillor Pat Fortini and Councillor Gurpreet Dillon. From our Economic Support Task Force, we have Councillor Paul Vicente and Councillor Michael Pleshy. And from our Youth Support Task Force, we have Councillor Charmaine Williams and Councillor Harkirat Singh. Also, from the Mayor's Recovery and Reopening Group, we have Councillor Martin Medeiros. And from the Backyard Garden Program, Councillor Doug Willens. In addition to the chairs of our four task forces, we also have Paul Morrison, our Director of Bylaw Enforcement, on the line this evening, along with Anand Patel, our Director of Recreation, to help answer any questions you may have. And last but not least, we have our Chief Administrative Officer, David Barrick, also on the line. If you'd like to ask a question tonight, please press star 3 on your phone at any time, and then you'll be prompted to go through the process and be able to ask your question of our experts. At this time, I'm going to go to Alain Normand, our Community Emergency Management Coordinator, to provide an update. Alain.
Thank you, Chief. Good evening, everybody. Thanks for joining us again tonight for more updates on this fight that we're into with COVID-19. It's been quite a long haul. We really started our operations back in January, so we're into 10 months, going into the 11th month now of actions since this started. Most of you started probably being informed, receiving information more in March, but still a long run. So a few things I want to share with you today. First, you might have heard a little bit about the success of our backyard garden program. We've raised, close to 10,000 or about 10,000 pounds of produce from our gardens. A big part of those from our firefighters are doing gardens behind the fire stations, and we're doing that in their off time. And we had also definitely Councillor Williams was a big proponent and supporter. And then we had also the community gardens, which is run by our parks operations people. And altogether, all of that food was distributed to our food banks in Brampton. So quite a lot of goods that were prepared, and we thank the citizens for their contribution to this. It was really quite an event, and it went very well. So the backyard gardens. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about a little bit is the Halloween plans. So, we're not canceling Halloween's. We're just modifying in order to maintain safety. So some of the things that we're going to do and our recreation is working on it. So one, we have a monster creative kit. So it's a beginning already. Residents can go to and pick up a Monster Mash activity kit. There's four centers, Cassie Campbell, Century Gardens, Gore Meadows, and Earnscliff have those kits. You can go anytime between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. on weekdays, or 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. On weekends, and pick up these kits in order to be able to decorate. And there's going to be some video tutorials on how to do the activity. So that we've got. Also, there's a pumpkin decorating contest started. So if you're into pumpkins and decoration, this is it. Yeah, and so we can have that, for the duration until Halloween. So there's different ways that we're going to do. I know the library is having programs as well. So look around. There's other activities. Other than that, we are working on winter plans. making sure we're ready for the winter. In particular, we've got a lot of issues and concerns that we have about from our homeless population, particularly in the downtown, but a little bit everywhere. We want to make sure that we find spaces for them, that we equip them, and that we help those people in being cared for, particularly as the weather gets colder, so that nobody's left out in the cold itself. So a lot of work is going on right now with the help of our task forces on that aspect. So that's about it on my side in terms of updates, and then I'll send it back to the chief. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you very much, Alain. We're now going to go to our mayor, Patrick Brown. He's here to provide his update. Mayor Brown.
Thank you, Chief Boys, and to all the residents listening to our Teletown Hall, I just want to say thank you for being with us again tonight. We are having these updates once every 3 weeks to make sure the briefings that I get from our first responders, from the hospital officials and the public health officials, that you have the same benefit of that information. And I really believe during a difficult time like this, transparency is so critical to make sure that you know exactly where we are and the basis for the decisions that are being made. So recently the province made a change for Brampton, putting us in stage 2 modified. And they had a provincial reopening earlier in the year where there were stage 1, 2, and 3, and we were previously in stage 3 where much of normal operations were back on. With stage 2 modified, they have shut down indoor team sports. They've shut down restaurants. I have to say, I was disappointed with this decision because many of the segments of our community that were shut down wasn't based on data. And you know, I've been very, very much someone that advocated the cautious approach. We had significant fines when people were having outdoor social gatherings that were too large and weren't consistent with the public health advice, but I did echo my disappointment to the Premier because I look at our restaurants, we didn't have a single forward transmission, not a single forward transmission, and I'm hopeful that after these 28 days that the numbers around the province will be down enough that we can open up indoor dining. But this just isn't strictly a health pandemic, it's an economic tidal wave, and my heart goes out to the small businesses because, boy, is this a tough year. And to all the residents listening, in the next 28 days, if you could really consider getting takeout, supporting businesses during this difficult period, every little bit helps. And by the way, today is Takeout Wednesday. It's an official day. So if you haven't had dinner tonight, intent order from a local restaurant. And even with recreation, they're disappointed because I thought it was being run safely. They did modify the regulations just recently. Dance studios, which were not allowed, are now going to be allowed. Shout out to Jade's Hip Hop Academy in Brampton. They helped with that campaign to get the province to change their position on that. And I'm going to continue to advocate to the province that they really need to look at the data in each individual region. And let me give you an example. On the restaurants in Toronto, their picture was very much, it warranted shutting down restaurants. They had a number of their cases that came from the restaurant and nightlife environment. We don't have a significant nightlife corridor in Brampton, so we didn't have the same source of transmission. And I hope that the province won't link regions with different dynamics on the same set of policies. I really believe they need to be more surgical going forward. And one of the reasons I think we've got a better ability right now to respond is we still have contact tracing in Peel Region. Now, contact tracing is where the case managers and the contact tracers determine where someone who's had transmission has actually been, who they've interacted with. And so they know where the virus is. They don't have contact tracing anymore in Toronto. They've lost that ability. They don't have contact tracing in Ottawa anymore. And yet we were being compared with Toronto and Ottawa. So our picture is different. And Dr. Lowe's team deserves credit. This is a real feather in the cap that they've been able to maintain contact tracing in Peel Region. We know where the virus is. We know where there's been exposure. And you'll get a phone call. You'll get a phone call. Someone will tell you, listen, you've had exposure. And so we're going to try for as long as we can to maintain that. It means more resources for case management workers and possibly more for contact tracers, but we're going to maintain it as long as we can because I believe contact tracing is critical to our ability to control the virus. Alan spoke briefly about Halloween. This was another provincial decision where in the stage two modified areas they canceled traditional trick-or-treating. And I'm a little bit disappointed with that too. I think Halloween's a special time for kids. And so as Alan was alluding to, we're going to try to make this fun. If the chief medical officer says we can't have Halloween, we can still find fun ways to celebrate Halloween. So Alan was talking about the pumpkin contest, where we're going to look at the most clever pumpkin designs, but we're also having a craftiest costume competition for the first time.
Right.
And we're going to have prizes for everyone that participates. You get a dessert, a candy from a local Brampton business, and information is going to go out on the city website and on social media about how to submit your costume on October 31st. But the top prize, and for any families listening on the call tonight, tell your kids the top prize. You have to be under the age of 10. So if you're 45 and listening to this call, you can't win the top prize.
That's my chance.
Okay, Bill?
Yeah, I'm out.
Okay. So the top prize is you win a chocolate bar the size of the winner. So if you're 4 feet tall, you win a 4 foot tall chocolate bar. We also got a litany of other prizes. And Chief, this just came in today. Our Firefighters Association heard that we were doing this initiative to make Halloween special for children in Brampton. They sent me a note, the Brampton Professional Firefighters Association, that they're sponsoring $500 in additional candy and treats.
That's awesome. That's fantastic.
So thank you for the firefighters. And that's a donation from Brampton firefighters from their own pocket. And I just want to say thank you to those frontline Brampton workers because we're looking at different ways to make this evening special. So more to come on that. And I'm looking forward to looking at some exceptional costumes from our youth in Brampton. Alan also touched upon the Brampton Backyard Garden update. And listen, I was blown away. 10,000 plus pounds donated to 6,000 residents who participated. This is a silver lining during the pandemic. And the person I got to give credit to, because it's important that I share how this all started, is Councillor Doug Willens came to me and he said, you know, a lot of people right now, a lot of garden supplies are being thrown out by local garden galleries. And he said, I think I know a few of them, and I can see if they can donate some supplies. And then we talked to the city if we had extra soil, and we put an offer out there to the public. And Councillor Willens said to me, Patrick, I think we can get 1,000 residents to do a backyard garden, and extra produce that's created will donate to the Knights Table and Regeneration and different charitable organizations. And I said, Doug, that's an ambitious idea, but how about instead of 1,000, we say 5,000? I think I gave him a heart attack because he spent his spring delivering topsoil and garden supplies, but we exceeded everyone's expectations. 6,000 residents participated. It's great for the environment when you've got more vegetable gardens and greenery, and it's great for our social service organizations. And I'm told, Chief, that our fire departments actually created gardens, too.
Yeah, 7 fire stations, and they were able to donate 25% of the overall produce that went to Regeneration
Amazing.
And Knights Table. So, yeah,
Amazing.
It was great, and they love doing it, and they love to help out.
Okay.
So
well,
another
thank
good
you.
Example.
Thank you for stepping up on that. A bylaw update. Earlier this summer, we had a number of challenges when people weren't following the social gathering limits. I want to say the compliance more recently has been really good. We haven't had to lay many charges. For me, that's a message that that the citizens of our city understand how serious this virus is. And a little bit of good news, we just got our credit rating back as a city, and despite the adversity of this year, we received a AAA credit rating with a stable outlook from S&P Global. So to have extremely high credit rating shows that we're still in a strong financial position as a city. I should also mention, and you probably heard this from the Brampton
Civic, the William Osler Health System folks, but they've administered 225,000 tests as of yesterday. The capacity at Branson Civic is still strong and stable. Only four patients in ICU as of yesterday. I think Dr. Martino may have more recent updates, but you know our capacity. If the second wave grows, we still have strong healthcare capacity. So if you do get sick, that the hospital can handle you. Now, don't go out there and get sick. I'm just saying we have strong capacity right now. So that's my summary for today, and I'm looking forward to hearing all the questions later on and for you to get the updates from our senior medical officials. And I should just close by saying, Chief, with Dr. Naveed Mohammed and Dr. Frank Martino, who are two of the senior physicians in all of Peel Region, and Dr. Lawrence Lowe at Peel Public Health, we've got an exceptional leadership of dedicated physicians. These guys are brilliant, and it gives me a lot of confidence that we've got the right people in the right positions during a very precarious time.
Great. Thank you very much, Mayor Brown, and very true. And they're on the phone tonight, so if you do have questions, please press *3, and you're able to ask those questions of our experts. Before we go to our next update with Dr. Lowe, I'd like to give our first poll question. Each week we do a couple poll questions, and we really do value the feedback that we get from these polls. So tonight, the first poll question that we'd like you to respond to is, if Brampton's COVID numbers don't rise significantly, would you like to see indoor dining in Brampton restaurants opened up as soon as possible? Press 1 for yes, press 2 for no, and press 3 for not sure. Again, the question, if Brampton's COVID numbers don't rise significantly, would you like to see indoor dining in Brampton restaurants opened up as soon as possible? Press 1 for yes, press 2 for no, press 3 for not sure. I'd like to now, we'll come back to those results after our updates, but we'll go to Dr. Lawrence Lowe, our Medical Officer Health with the Region Appeal. Dr. Lowe?
Thank you, Chief, and thank you, Mayor, Councillors, and residents for your continued support throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm happy to provide an update on the situation in the City of Brampton and overall in the Region of Peel. As of this afternoon, we had a total of 7,314 cases of COVID-19 in the City of Brampton, and that's a cumulative total. 579 of those are currently pending an outcome, meaning they're active. 6,638 have recovered, and 97 have passed away. In general, the most important message that I want to get out is that our rates of transmission in the Region of Peel and in Brampton remain high, but largely consistent. And certainly, we've continued to monitor outbreaks and trace contacts and cases as effectively as we can, while also contending with the recent provincial laboratory backlog. However, while our transmission picture, as Mayor Brown has correctly identified, was at least initially different in Toronto and Ottawa, our case numbers over the last 10 days suggest that the brief pause that came in may have come in just at the right time. And so if everyone remembers what I talked about in the spring, there's this golden period of disease control. We may have just nipped this one in the bud, and hopefully that would mean a shorter time in the modified stage 2 restrictions that have been identified than longer. Certainly, I do recognize as well that many of the restrictions that were put in place didn't necessarily match the patterns of transmission that we were observing in our community. But it's important to remember that there is evidence of such transmission in settings adjacent to our community as well as throughout the world, which means that in terms of trying to make sure that we are taking precautions, that these are likely going to be helping us, hopefully, in the long run. Really, the chief underlying message of everything that's happened in terms of moving back to a modified stage 2, proposals and the recommendations around a contactless Halloween or an adapted Halloween, as well as the ongoing efforts of Peel Public Health to address workplace outbreaks together with the Ministry of Labour, household transmission by pursuing an isolation centre with the federal government, and also addressing social gatherings, which was brought in with the new provincial restrictions, pushing for a lower consistent social gathering across all settings, is really one fundamental thing. So we have to remember that COVID-19 is a disease that spreads from person to person. And if people are not meeting in close contact, this disease cannot spread. So, you know, I know there's a lot of questions, a lot of frustration. You know, my own children are less than enthused that Halloween has been adapted and that we're not going to be doing traditional trick-or-treating this year. But the reality is that we have this novel virus for which we're not sure who might be susceptible or how they might be susceptible circling in our community. And so that means we must continue to take precautions and we must continue to reduce our interactions and to reduce our contact numbers. And so that means that, you know, certainly, hopefully, with the modified stage 2 restrictions that have come into place, those will have an effect over the next little while. They'll certainly keep our businesses and our residents safe, particularly around the fact that residents from other adjacent communities within the metropolitan Greater Toronto Area might be mobile and might visit if they remained open. And also in recognition that some of our residents would engage in those activities if it was differentially applied in one city over the other. On the topic of Halloween, I think it's really important for me to reiterate what Mayor Brown said. I think now is not the time, you know, as much as possible to reduce traditional trick-or-treating. In terms of trying to reduce our contacts, my advice has really been over the last couple of weeks as we've moved into a modified stage 2 to limit your close contact as much as possible to people in your immediate household. So this means, you know, people that you live with, as well as your essential supports, recognizing that not everyone lives with family. Some people may live alone. Some people may require a caregiver or some childcare provider to provide daily supports. These are the people that you should be letting into your 2-meter bubble and that you should be exclusive to as much as possible. Outside of those close supports within your immediate household, I really encourage you to curtail any other in-person activities to the extent that you can. So making sure that you are limiting any discretionary social activities, which unfortunately includes trick-or-treating, or for the young adults who might be listening, you know, big Halloween parties, you know, I think those all need to either postpone or get canceled or basically move virtually. But really, what we should be doing is trying to limit our in-person interactions as much as possible for the most essential of reasons. And so in Peel, we define those as work, school, exercise and fitness, healthcare, and also access to food, drink, gasoline, and automobile maintenance. And don't forget to get your winter tires with the snow coming in the fall. But essentially, the key message is close contact only with your immediate household and essential supports. And for everybody else, postpone, cancel, and move virtually if you can. And otherwise, if you do have to meet in person, make sure it's for an essential reason. And make sure you're doing so with precautions and keeping numbers low. I spoke to the and alluded to the upcoming fall and winter season. And the other thing that I really must drive home at this point in time is the importance to be prepared for influenza as well. As we do know that as the weather gets colder and as we move into our homes, there is a lot more influenza that also circulates in our community. And the best way that you can take influenza out of the equation if you were to get sick is to make sure that you get your flu shot. We know that COVID and influenza can have very similar signs and symptoms. We know that they can present similarly. And with all the quarantine and isolation and restriction measures, plus the fact that we would need to investigate every case that looks like COVID on our end, one of the best things you can do to help us and help our hospital partners cope is to make sure you get your flu shot this year. I will say that given the significant demand and interest in the flu shot, you know, I will ask people to be as patient as you can. The province distributes influenza vaccine and rations it, or allocates it rather, to each individual health unit. And we basically then need to allocate it to many different providers across our region. And so we do try to get it out. Pretty much it comes in on our shelves and goes right out again. And so we will get it out there, but you want to make sure that you're patient and that you plan ahead, recognizing that, again, it's not like snow tires. It's not something that you want to leave for the last minute and just try to figure out where things are at and identify a pharmacy or a provider that you can get your flu shot from. And so I think the final thing that I wanted to say is really, as we move towards the end of the 28 days, one thing that you can all do, and you know, really grateful for Mayor Brown and council and everyone's support as we continue to case and contact manage in the region of Peel, you know, it's becoming increasingly difficult, particularly as our case count remains, you know, consistent but stubbornly high. And what we need to do ultimately is really try to drive that case number down so that our case and contact management system can cope, that our testing system can cope, and to make sure that we are able then to really firmly identify where the chains of transmission are occurring in our community. So the most important thing that you can do to help us as we continue to try to control the spread of COVID-19 in our community is to make sure that you're taking the advice to reduce your contacts seriously. Regardless of what the rules say, regardless of which business can be open, not open, regardless of what Halloween's up to, or later on in the fall season, the biggest thing is to make sure that you're limiting the number of close in-person contacts that you're having, and to the extent possible, make sure that that's your immediate household and essential support, and take precautions with every other essential in-person activity that you need to engage in. So with that, I will thank you all. I know it's not easy. I know many people in Brampton work in jobs that do not permit them to necessarily to work from home. This is why the precautions are absolutely essential to keep you safe, to keep each other at your workplace safe, and to keep our entire community safe as we try to drive cases down and make sure that we can return to some other additional semblance of an adaptive normal. So thank you very much, and I'll pass it back to Chief Boyce.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe. And before we go to Dr. Frank Martino, just want to ask the poll question one more time to make sure that we can get everybody's response back. The question is, if Brampton's COVID numbers don't rise significantly, would you like to see indoor dining in Brampton restaurants open up as soon as possible? Press 1 for yes, press 2 for no, and press 3 for not sure. With that, we will go now to Dr. Frank Martino from William Osler Health System. Thanks, Dr. Martino, for joining us. I know it's been a while, and you were on in the early town halls back in March, so we appreciate you coming back.
Thank you, and good evening to everyone on the line. I'm Dr. Frank Martino, and I'm the Interim Vice President of Medical Affairs, Research, and Academics at William Osler Health System. I'm stepping in for Dr. Naveed Mohammed, who's attending another community meeting this evening. I participated in a few of the city's town telephone town hall events at the onset of the pandemic, and I'm extremely pleased to be able to join you again tonight. With the province and our region facing higher numbers of new positive cases of COVID-19, I know many of you are concerned. Our focus at Osler remains on providing care to all our patients, those who have COVID-19 and those who rely on us for care for other illnesses and procedures. Our teams have been working incredibly hard to ensure that our hospitals have the capacity needed to provide care for an increased number of people, if needed, in the time ahead. Many of Osler's services, I am happy to say, are at 100% or higher of our pre-COVID volumes. In some programs, physicians and staff are working extended hours to ensure patients receive the care they need. We continue to expand our virtual care options so when possible, people do not need to come into the hospital in person. Virtual care is proving to be well received by many patients. A few weeks ago, as many of you may already know, the Ontario government directed changes for COVID-19 testing centres across the province. Osler is following these guidelines, meaning that our COVID-19 testing centres, including the Brampton Centre at South Fletcher's sports complex, are only available to those who meet the testing criteria and those who book an appointment either by phone or on our website. If you'd like to receive a test at an Osler testing center, you can book an appointment online through our website, or you can call one of our dedicated COVID-19 test booking call centers at, and I'll repeat this number a couple of times for people, it's 905-487-1249, and that's 905-487-1249. It is staffed 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. At our COVID-19 cold and flu clinic, those who are eligible can walk in for testing. The clinic is also seeing patients who have cold and flu and possible COVID-19 symptoms and who would like to see a physician. The clinic is open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily. Since it is not a testing center, no appointment is necessary. So I'd like to repeat, no appointment is necessary. Clinic hours will expand on November 2nd to 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. daily. The COVID-19 cold and flu clinic is actually located at the Peel Memorial Center in what used to be the Earth and continues to be our urgent care center. This clinic provides those with symptoms with a dedicated place to receive a test and care, and it helps ensure that our emergency department continues to have capacity for patients who have illnesses or conditions that are not related to COVID-19. As Mayor Brown indicated, at Osler, we've reached a new milestone in our COVID-19 testing efforts just recently. We've surpassed 225 COVID-19 tests completed, still the most completed by any hospital in the province. Over the last few weeks, we've seen the number of COVID-19 cases in the community rise. We've also seen an increase in the number of patients with a COVID-19 who are requiring care at our hospitals. There are currently 19 patients in Brampton Civic Hospital, and four of those patients are receiving care in our intensive care unit. Before I close, I'd like to remind you of how important it is to pay close attention to your health. We know COVID-19 is a significant concern for many of you, but it's also important for you to take care of yourself and your overall health. While I hope all of us remain healthy, I know there are times when some of us may feel unwell. I encourage you to pay attention to any symptoms you may be experiencing and to seek medical care when you need it, whether it's a visit to an emergency department or a family physician, or ensure you make it to an appointment with a specialist. Please keep and take the steps you may need to safeguard your health during this period of pandemic. I appreciate the time I've been allotted this evening, and I look forward to answering your questions during the Q&A.
That's great. Thank you very much, Dr. Martino. We're going to go now to our next update with Councillor Paul Vicente, one of the co-chairs of the Economic Support Task Force. Good evening, Councillor Vicente.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you, Chief. Just everyone who's listening, we are very pleased to share some additional good news that we just got today, and we want to share that the jobs at the Chrysler plant in Brampton have been secured for an additional 3 years. Unifor and Fiat Chrysler Automobiles ratified a new 3-year contract and are making a $50 million investment in the Brampton assembly plant. The assembly of the Chrysler 300, the Dodge Charger, and the Challenger models will continue. And remembering that this also helps keep jobs and businesses that supply the plant. There are Brampton businesses that support the plant through just-in-time shipping, logistics, and parts. October is Small Business Month, and as our mayor has challenged us to get out and show our support for our local businesses, we'd like to encourage you to continue to do the same. Our small businesses are the backbone of our community, and we all know that they have struggled throughout this pandemic, particularly now with indoor dining once again restricted. Let's support our local restaurants and businesses. Order food for pickup or delivery. Choose to give gift cards from local businesses as gifts and visit our local businesses. They need us now. And in line with supporting local, remember that today is Takeout Wednesday, as is every Wednesday. So if you haven't had dinner yet, consider ordering from one of our many fantastic local restaurants. I'm also pleased to announce that Brampton continues to lead the way in terms of the number of applications from our local businesses for the Digital Main Street Shop Here program, which helps small businesses build an online shopping presence. We love to see our businesses taking advantage of the programs that are available to them. We're also pleased that last week, the federal government announced a new rent relief program available to businesses who have had a revenue decline during COVID-19. We are very happy to see our businesses getting much needed support. So on behalf of myself and Councillor Pileschi, who represent at the Mayor's Economic Support Task Force, we're always ready to answer your questions. If you're a local business and you need our help, email us at covid19business@brampton.ca. And thank you very much, Chief. Back to you.
Great. Thank you very much, Councillor Vicente. Appreciate the update. I'm going to go now. We have a few brief updates from our emergency services chiefs. First, I'll go to Deputy Chief Randy Patrick with Peel Regional Police. Deputy Patrick.
Yes, thanks, Chief, and just being mindful of the time and want to leave an opportunity for the citizens to be able to ask their questions. I'll be very brief. I'll just mention that despite a few members having contacted the virus over the past 7 months, we do remain healthy and are prepared to address any community safety issues as they arise. I'm just also going to point out that Peel Regional Police to date have completed over 1,850 compliance checks for those people under a 14-day quarantine order under the Federal Quarantine Act. So for those who are under an order, just a word of caution that we will be checking in on you. So just to close, just ask everyone to please listen to our public health experts and heed their advice so that we can all stay healthy and safe. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Deputy Patrick. And again, for everyone listening, I'm Bill Boyce, the fire chief here at the City of Brampton. And two very brief updates, just for your awareness, to keep an eye out on. After November 2nd, you will see a brand new black fire truck out on the street that's wrapped in support of Men's Health for Movember. Typically, we do each October a pink wrapped truck for breast cancer, and this year we're trying a truck that will be wrapped in black for Movember. So kudos to our Professional Firefighters Association who facilitates getting sponsors to have this truck wrapped, and it goes out around to different community events, and you'll see us out and about. So keep an eye out. It's a very cool-looking truck. And just lastly, if you're interested in a career as a firefighter with the City of Brampton, we are undergoing a recruitment now for firefighters that closes on October the 28th. And please go to the website www.brampton.ca/firecrew for more information. There's a lot of great details there. With that, I will pass it over to the Deputy Chief of Peel Regional Paramedic Services, Brian Gibson. Deputy Gibson?
Thanks, Chief, and good evening, everyone. I'm also mindful of time and want to get to your questions, so I will be brief. Again, want to reassure everyone on the call and everyone in the City of Brampton, the Region of Peel, that Peel Regional Paramedic Services is still well-positioned to respond to the needs of the community, and I thank you for your patience and assistance when you do call for our services. So with that, I'll pass it back to the Chief and look forward to your questions tonight.
Thank you very much, Deputy Gibson. And we're going to get your questions in one moment. Just a reminder that if you would like to ask a question, to press *3 on your phone now. We are going to go for right till 8 o'clock tonight with your questions. And the last thing is we'd like to review the poll results. So the question was, if Brampton's COVID numbers don't rise significantly, would you like to see indoor dining in Brampton restaurants opened up as soon as possible? And 42% said yes, 32% said no, and 26% were still unsure. So thank you very much for your feedback. We will go to the second poll question later this evening. And right now, our first question comes from Carmen. Carmen, if you're there, go ahead with your question, please.
Yes, hi, and thank you for allowing me to ask a question. I'm a small business owner here in the City of Brampton. And as I have been looking at some of the data, I'm just a little alarmed at how scared everybody is, and I'm not saying that fear isn't good, but to the point of it being unhealthy within the community had me really looking into the numbers. So I just want to share a couple of things with you. So I looked at the time from June 1st until today, October 21st, because I think that's when we believed we had somewhat of a handle on the pandemic in early June and started loosening restrictions. And when I looked at the total number of deaths against the number of infections during this time, I found that there was 38,827 new cases of COVID-19. Now, this is not in addition to what the current cases were existing. Those are just the new cases from June 1st until today. And then weighed that against the deaths, which tragically were 786. So that equated to a 0.02% rate of death. Now, to date in Ontario, we've had 3,062 deaths from COVID-19. And looking at this against a regular influenza, back in 2018, we had 3,220 deaths from regular influenza. Now, that is 23 deaths per 100,000, weighed against COVID deaths year to date, which are 21.87 per 100,000 in the population. Now, I understand that, yes, one of the reasons that we have such good numbers probably is because we have been mitigating the risk by wearing masks, social distancing, sanitizing, et cetera. I guess what my question is, are we, now that we seem to have a really good handle, I think there's too much fear, and while I think we have a good handle on it, is it not time to step back and rather than constantly be negative, really look at what we have done as a society and not so much emphasis on the dangers of COVID now that we have found a way to live with it day to day? And also, this could really help bring back our economy and our society as we begin to sway off the fear of COVID and look at the more positive things that we have done to mitigate the risk of COVID. Sorry, I know that was a long question and it was more of a statement, but thank you.
Thank you very much, Carmen, for your detailed question, and I'll pass it over to our Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Lawrence Lowe.
Thanks, Chief Boyce. Thanks, Carmen. It's a long question, but there's a very simple and short explanation. In fact, it's not just the distancing and all those other pieces that actually led to the lower death rates that we have here, but it was the initial closures and curtailments that were taken in the spring. And I think we've seen what happens where you have a closure and curtailment that is abruptly ended, and then, you know, with an unrestricted opening in the United States. I think we see similar patterns in many of the Western European countries at this point in time. And, you know, it's really funny because one of the interesting things that I'm trying to do is I'm trying to stick close to the data, the evidence, and the science. And so while I do agree, and I have said this very often, so much so that one of our local media outlets have called me a cheerleader and not a leader, that I think we've done very well in Brampton. And I think we've actually done well against significant adversity and significant disparity, considering how many of our staff are not, how many of our residents aren't able to work from home. We also have to remember that this is a disease for which if we do not keep ahead of it, if we do not take this seriously, then we will see the picture of what we're seeing in Western Europe, where they're having even more significant closures and curtailments than what we're having right now because their hospital numbers are rising. So I think it's easy to look at the numbers and say, oh, well, the death rate's like influenza. But you have to remember, influenza is a disease for which we have immunity. We've lived with it for hundreds of years. It is a disease for which we have a vaccine, for which we have treatments. COVID-19 does not have any of that. And that becomes part of the challenge in terms of trying to control COVID-19, because if we just let everything go back to unfettered, then we're going to end up looking a lot like other countries where similar steps were taken and similar results were observed. So I think it's a fine line between fear and success, but we really do need to make sure that we're treading that fine line rather than going too hard one way or the other. So I'll agree with you, no fear, but I'll also agree with you, I think we need to remain vigilant. Thank you. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe, for that great advice. We're going to go now to our next caller, which is Lori. Lori, if you're there, go ahead with your question, please.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for your time. The question I have is more about transparency. And when we talk about the numbers going up, and is there a way for us to know, or for you to tell us, where the numbers are coming from? Like, if they're not ideally from the restaurant, are they coming from travel? Are they coming from workplaces? Like, is there an industry, I guess, is what I'm looking for, or where they're coming from?
Yeah, I'm sure Dr. Lowe will want to add some comments here, but let me just say, you know, obviously it's been mentioned in the media that there's workplace spread and household spread, but I really believe that we have got unsung heroes in Peel Region and in Brampton that deserve credit because they're acquiring the virus. They're going to work knowing that they face a risk. We have essential workers. We have 11,000 people working in transportation logistics, 8,500 working in the food processing sector. At the beginning of the pandemic, we had an outbreak in a food processing facility in the northwest of Brampton. We've had the cases that were in the media with Amazon. Our medical officer, Health, spoke about our truckers that were acquiring the virus south of the border. And I want to say thank you to all these unsung heroes because I believe Brampton is critical to Canada's supply chain. And these cases that we have, if we did not have these sectors working, you would not have food in restaurants. You would not have groceries at the grocery store. Maintaining our supply chain is critical to Canada, and Brampton has really risen to the occasion. And so, you know, for those facing a greater challenge, a greater risk, I want to say thank you. And we're cognizant that you know, some of the numbers we see are because of unselfish heroism that we see amongst essential workers. And Dr. Lowe, if you want to add to this broader context.
Thanks so much for the Mayor Brown, for the context, and thanks so much for the caller for the question. Transparency and disclosure is one of these things that is really, really important and foremost on my mind. I want to be very clear. If there's ever a risk to the public from the course of an exposure that we identify in our COVID-19 investigations, we would absolutely disclose where, the timing, and who needs to contact us. But I think one thing that gets forgotten in the course of this discussion is that the cases, the numbers, these aren't just faceless people. These are our residents. These are our relatives, our family, our friends, could be anyone you know. And so in the event that they have done everything, they may have done everything right, and they still got COVID-19, you know, and in the event that they have not, you know, if unduly put the public at risk, it becomes a personal health issue at that point in time. And so I think there, you know, it's important to remember that public health has this dual role. We have an absolute role to protect the public, which is why we will disclose where a public risk exists. But we also have a role to protect the personal health information of these individuals who've been impacted by this terrible disease, where no such risk exists, and where ultimately they are privileging us with this information so that we can actually control this disease. So we do provide information in our weekly epidemiologic summaries that provide information in aggregate around what we're seeing in the community and workplaces and homes and travel cases. We have also come up with an age and occupation report, which is in the process of being updated, that identifies what the highest risk occupations are, also in terms of some of the more disparities that are seen amongst ethnic groups in our community. And I think those are the data that were out there. But I think going back to what I was saying, the idea that all of us are ultimately potentially at risk, you know, it's the information is certainly interesting and of a curiosity, I think. But the safest and best thing to do at this point in time is to assume that because it's circulating in the community, that it could be anywhere. Now, granted, there are certain things that are at higher risk, and those are all identified in the summary reports that we put out there. But if you want to make sure you don't get COVID-19, then you want to make sure that you're taking the precautions seriously. And that means for anyone outside of your immediate household or essential supports through whom you're having close contact, you want to make sure that you're actually, you know, sticking to 2 meters of distance, masking, meeting for essential reasons, moving stuff online where you can, you know, to the extent that you're able to reduce person-to-person contact, because a disease that is spread from person to person cannot spread if people don't meet. So, I mean, I certainly, you know, we will always disclose where a risk exists to the public, but beyond that, we also have to recognize that these people have been impacted by COVID-19 and that these may be their livelihoods and their lives that are on the line if we disclose inadvertently. Thanks very much. I'll pass it back to the Chief.
Great. Thank you very much, Mayor Brown and Dr. Lowe. Right now, we actually have three poll questions this evening, so we're going to do our second poll right away here. This poll relates to the flu shot. Do you plan to get your flu shot this year to avoid serious health complications? Press 1 for yes, press 2 for no, press 3 for not sure. Again, the question, do you plan to get your flu shot this year to avoid serious health complications? Press 1 for yes, press 2 for no, and press 3 for not sure. We'll come back to those results in a few moments and go to our next question, which comes from Kwan. Kwan, if you're there, go ahead with your question, please.
Where Sundays, I had my mother, she's 94 year old, she lived with me. Every year she take the flu shot. But this year is because of COVID-19, so the government advised the old people not supposed to be come out very risky. So my question is, do you reason had the flu shot served at home for the old people?
Thank you very much, Kwan, for your question, and I'll put this over to our two doctors, and maybe we'll let Dr. Lowe go first, and if Dr. Martino has anything to add, we can jump in.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Chief, and thanks so much, Kwan, for the question. At this point in time, there's no plans to have in-home delivery of the influenza immunization, but I would encourage your mother to get a flu shot from her family doctor. Or also visit fuelregion.ca/flu
for further information about where she might be able to get a flu shot, or if you're able to do that for her, because it will help to protect her as she's in a higher risk group. And I think that's probably the best thing to say. With precautions, if she were to visit in the appropriate places, there won't be an issue. And so there's that. But at this time, there's no plan to provide in-home delivery of influenza immunization. I don't know if you wanted to add to that, Dr. Martino.
Thank you, Lawrence. And yes, I would like to echo the importance of vaccination, and in this case, influenza vaccination. And I would encourage, Kwan, that you take your mother to a family physician or a facility that is providing flu vaccination. She will receive a high-dose Fluzone shot that we provide individuals over age 65. The places you'll go to will do screening to assure that the location is safe and that others that have been there are not symptomatic for conditions that that are related to COVID-19 or symptoms related to COVID-19. She should wear a mask and wear a mask throughout your journey to the family doctor's office and back. It's an extremely important public health measure, especially because influenza does mimic, to some degree, COVID-19 infections, and so it makes it easier for us as practitioners to really reduce the burden of influenza and cold-like viruses during this pandemic, so that patients don't end up overrunning our healthcare system, our emergency departments. And my hope is that over the subsequent months of the fall and winter of this year and next, we'll see less flu-like illness in our community because of social distancing and wearing face coverings and face masks. But yes, immunization, they asked a number of famous scientists, international scientists, that necessarily were not in the healthcare sector. What one of the greatest discoveries of the last century was, and guess what? It was vaccination. It saved millions and millions of lives.
Thank you very much, Kwan, for the question, and to our two doctors. And it's a perfect segue into the results of our poll question, which was, do you plan to get your flu shot this year to avoid serious health complications? And 65% said yes, with 21% saying no, and 14% still unsure. So hopefully we can get that 14% to move over into the yes side. With our next question, we will go to Francis. Francis, if you're there, go ahead with your question, please.
Hi. Thank you for having these town halls. I've listened to them many times, except I've never been able to ask a question, so I'm glad I've gotten through this time. My concern is when you go into, let's say, Costco is a real big issue for me. People tend to take off their masks, talk on the phone, with no one monitoring people. I've had to have several discussions, more so yelling matches, with people who aren't abiding by the protocols. Wondering if bylaw officers actually go into these places and check them out to see what's going on. And the amount of people that are being let in, I believe, is more than what there should be in the stores. And number two, I was just wondering what is happening with the 15, 20 people that are living in one home if these landlords are getting punished for this. Those are my questions.
Yeah, so great question. And I can tell you that, you know, we have a consistent mask bylaw across the GTA. It's something we put in with other mayors. We really believe that wearing a mask makes a difference. It's a clear advice of our medical professionals, and we're trying to make sure the city is as compliant as possible. It's why we mailed everyone in the city three masks. It's why we had giveaways on transit of masks to create momentum for broad compliance. Now, there will be instances if you have a medical reason, a respiratory reason why you can't wear a mask, that's legitimate. But for anyone who doesn't have a medical reason, we expect you to wear a mask. And I can tell you we take it seriously. Paul Morrison's on the call tonight, and we do lay tickets. And he can't, for privacy reasons, say who he's ticketed, but I know, you know, you mentioned one major retailer. I can tell you there's been a major retailer who's faced a significant fine. So, Paul Morrison, if you're on the call, if you could just let those listening, the average amount of fines we issue per week and what the range of the fines are. So if a large retailer got a fine, what the fine could be, and if an individual got a fine, what type of fine that would be. We are seeing increasing compliance, but we know there are, you know, it's ongoing, an ongoing battle to make sure there's compliance, and we're going to continue to try to push for that compliance the best we can. And Paul Morrison is our director of bylaw enforcement. His team is doing a great job, doing their best with the resources they have. Paul, could you give us a little bit of a update on the situation in Brampton as well?
Well, absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I can tell you that we do look at all the businesses within the city of Brampton, and we try to split our time among those businesses, the big box stores, the medium-sized stores, and the smaller stores, the grocery stores, the corner variety stores. And we have laid tickets. We've laid, last week we laid 18 tickets in the different stores. We gave out a dozen warnings. And overall, we think our compliance is very good. People know that we're out in these stores. We do take the time to consult with many of the larger businesses, their head offices. I can tell you specifically, and I'm proud of the work Costco does with us. We've met with them many times. Our officers go in there. Our officers go into the other big box stores and enforce. So we try to get to as much as we can and as quickly as we can. And for your other question, for the landlord and those multiple people living in the homes, our investigations continue. We get complaints in weekly, daily on those type of living arrangements, and we do go investigate and validate whether it's an actual complaint that's legitimate or whether it's not a legitimate premise where people are overloading the home. And where applicable, we do charge. So we do follow up. Our work hasn't stopped. We've been at this since the pandemic began in March, or for us when it began in March. And we've gone consistently through there with a complete full staff. And our officers continue to do good work out there.
Thank you very much, Paul. And yes, definitely a shout out to the bylaw officers that are doing an incredible job from March all the way through this pandemic. So kudos to your staff. Going on to the next question, it comes from Natasha. Natasha, if you're there, go ahead, please, with your question.
Hi. Hello?
Hi, Natasha. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hi. I actually have a question about the mask. I know that the reusable mask, the ones you wash, I was just asking, the inserts that come with it, if we run out of them, is it okay to use paper towel or the coffee filters for the inserts, or does it really make a big difference if you don't use it?
Thank you very much, Natasha, and I'll pass this over to our doctor, Dr. Lowe.
Yeah, thanks so much for the question. Chief Boyce, could you remind me just the last part of that, because there was a little bit of static on the line, unfortunately.
Yeah, just wondering if using something like a coffee filter or something could be used instead of a washable mask, or would that be something that would be safe to be able to do?
I was trying to make sure that I had gotten the gist of it. In general, the aim, at least with the use of non-medical masks in public spaces, is to try to prevent its source control. It's trying to prevent, in the event that you're pre-symptomatically possibly transmitting COVID-19, trying to prevent your droplets from being spread further. From a pure barrier philosophy, I suppose you could use a filter of that nature. But I think to the extent that you can really just try to stick to, a one-piece type of mask, I think that'd be more ideal and would be more secure. We do know that there are certain masks that have valves on them, et cetera, that are not recommended for the reason that there may be gaps, that there may be a greater expulsion of droplets from those.
Given that I unfortunately don't have any evidence around whether coffee filters have an appropriate mesh to capture droplets or whatnot in the way that the original intended microfiber inserts might do, it's probably best to try to stick to the manufacturer's instructions or to use a simple non-medical mask, a simple non-medical one-piece mask. I think that would probably be the best advice I could give in this instance. Thanks, and Chief, back to you.
Thank you very much, Natasha and Dr. Lowe, for the response. Just a reminder to everybody listening, if you would like to ask a question tonight of any one of the experts on the line, please press star 3 on your phone at any time. We will go now to our next question, which comes from Don. Don, if you're there, go ahead, please, with your question.
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to thank all you gentlemen for doing the work you're doing to keep it as best you can from getting any worse. And I'd just like to ask the question. My father is in a long-term care facility. We are allowed to see him outside during the summer months. It's getting colder now. And unless you have a COVID test, you're not allowed to go into the building to see anybody. But my question was is, what are you doing differently this time to prevent COVID cases in long-term care facilities?
Yeah, and great question. It's Mayor Brown here. And Don, for me, this is the hits home. You know, my grandmother is 106, still sharp, and she's in a long-term care facility, one that had a very difficult outbreak. And I was in the same position where I had to get a COVID test to see her. The rules changed again on October 5th, and now it's only essential visitors, so I can't even visit her. So I know the province, which regulates this, has strengthened the rules to protect seniors. But, you know, this is one of the hardest parts of the pandemic because I worry, you know, one, you have to protect these fragile members of our community. But at the same time, I think there's a mental health toll with the social isolation. So it's something that keeps me up each week for sure. I'm not sure if Dr. Martino or Dr. Lowe, if you want to speak to any insights you have with the new regulation, with the new provincial regulations around long-term care facilities and what we can do to better protect seniors than some of the challenges that existed during the first wave.
Go ahead, Frank.
Go ahead. Okay. Why don't I start? Then Lawrence, maybe you can conclude. I think we've all realized that the long-term care sector is demonstrated itself to be a very vulnerable sector within our healthcare system. And we saw the number of deaths in a number of long-term care homes within our region and across the province, and for that matter, around the world. What we have learned is that it is important to apply robust infection prevention and control strategies in these facilities, to work with both the operators of these homes, whether they're for-profit, not-for-profit, or not-for-profit or government-funded homes. So at Osler, we've created a relationship with 19 homes that Ontario Health has linked us to, and we continue to work with those homes to look at processes, policies, staffing structure, infection protection and control, the use of appropriate personal protective equipment, screening, testing, all the tools we have at hand to prevent what happened during the first wave. We feel confident that this will not happen in subsequent waves of this particular contagion. And, we will continue to work with these homes, the leadership within the homes, along with our public health partners to assure that that we don't have the outbreaks we had during the first wave. And my hope is that we'll be successful in that regard.
And Chief, if I may add on to Dr. Martino's comments, I think it really is what is called like a multi-barrier approach to try to prevent COVID-19 from getting into homes. And really the very first barrier starts in reducing community transmission. So if you've got low rates of community transmission, if we get our daily case count down, then that reduces the risk that it gets into long-term care homes and also into other vulnerable settings, which really is another call to action to all of us to make sure that we are limiting our close contacts to our household and our immediate supports, and then to immediate household and essential supports, and then trying to minimize as much as possible contacts beyond that. But then I think everything else that Dr. Martino's identified are absolutely pieces that are going to be there in terms of infection prevention and control, barriers, screening, all those other things. Those are things that were identified. Staffing piece was identified as well, and ensuring that staff are remaining, linked to their specific home. I think those are all steps that are going to be taken. I think it's worth noting as well that, as Dr. Martino identified, this is something that has challenged many countries where long-term care homes are part of the community milieu. Many other countries that didn't see similar crises in long-term care homes maybe have a tradition of people aging in home, aging in place, which is something just in the broader term that we're certainly working to and thinking of when we think about a holistic view of health here in our community. But I think it's really, really critical to drive home the fact that here in the region of Peel, we've worked very closely with OSLR, with all of our hospital partners, with Ontario Health Central Region, our paramedics, they were in homes swabbing. So there is an integrated response table that in the course of the first wave in our community managed to test all 28 out of 28 long-term care homes and finished doing so 2 weeks before the provincial deadline that was set, and that has since managed to continue keeping this out of our long-term care homes, touch wood, hopefully so. At this point in time, we have 8 outbreaks in long-term care homes, but an outbreak is defined as one case, and pretty much all of the long-term care homes that are currently in outbreak are because of a single staff case that was picked up on surveillance testing. Surveillance testing meaning that we're checking staff every so often to make sure they're not positive for COVID and bringing it into the home. So we're not seeing transmission homes right now, and I absolutely intend, together with our hospital partners, to keep it that way. Thank you, and I'll pass it back to the chief.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe, Martino, and Mayor Brown. We're going to go now to our third and final poll of the evening. The question is, if Brampton's COVID numbers don't rise significantly, would you like to see indoor recreation opportunities in Brampton opened up as soon as possible? Press 1 for yes, press 2 for no, and press 3 for not sure. Again, the poll question, if Brampton's COVID numbers don't rise significantly, would you like to see indoor recreation opportunities in Brampton opened up as soon as possible? Press 1 for yes, press 2 for no, and press 3 for unsure. We'll go to our next question, and which comes from Justin. Justin, if you're there, go ahead with your question, please.
I am here, guys. Thank you. That's actually a great segue into my question because it pertains to recreation. And this may be a little bit more provincially aimed question, but if after this 28-day period we are able to, see maybe a step forward, is the city going to consider allowing more people on, for example, a facility such as an ice surface where we have, 4 to 5 times the space, if not more, of a dance studio? And if we do stay with the current ratio of, 9 players to 1 coach or 8 players to 2 coaches, would the city consider reducing the prime time rate so that families can have some affordable accessibility, particularly to ice surfaces during this time? Because there is a lot of demand out there, but the cost is just exorbitantly high when you have to divide it out over a small amount of participants. Thanks.
Justin, a great question, and I've been pretty open about this. I believe recreation is something that's important to have. I think there's mental health components with ability to get out there. You look at rising rates of childhood obesity and challenges we have with cardiac issues in Peel Region. I want people to have healthy lifestyles. I want kids to be active. I want everyone to be active. And so the closure of recreational facilities, I know Dr. Lowe knows I was more than a bit frustrated about this. Was not a local decision, it was a provincial order. It's for 28 days, and I really hope, and I'll be pleading with the provincial government to really look at the data behind this one. We haven't had many incidents in recreation. I know Dr. Lowe mentioned a few to me the other day, but it has been rather minimal. There was an incident in Hamilton that caused quite a stir, but overall, I think our recreational facilities in Peel Region have been careful, prudent, following the public health advice, and so
As soon as we're allowed to, from the province, as soon as we're allowed to, we'll open them up again. But you know, it's going to be a 28-day period where the province makes this calculation. I can look at right now. You can only do training on ice surfaces. I'll speak to our recreation team if we could have some reduced rates during this period. You can do training right now with a low number of people. You can't have any gameplay, but we'll look into that. It's something I'll discuss at the office tomorrow. And I would add this. We're going to have an exciting announcement next week. Not to give too many details away, but we're going to have, starting in December, a number of outdoor recreational activities for the city like you've never seen before. I know that this pandemic's not going to be over anytime soon, and we got to get through this winter. I don't want people cooped up in their houses all winter long. We're going to have some exciting new activities outdoors that the population of Brampton can enjoy. We're working on that plan right now, and I can't wait. I wish I could announce it today, but we have to finish it up, and there's going to be some good news coming on some amazing new options for people for outdoor activities. I think everyone's going to be pleasantly surprised by it.
This must be a big announcement because the mayor is smiling ear to ear. So
I do have a bias when it comes to recreation because I love it so much, but I just think it's great for the city, and I think it's great for everyone's personal health.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mayor Brown, and thank you, Justin, for the question. We're going to go now to our poll results, and the question tonight related to recreation was, if Brampton's COVID numbers don't rise significantly, would you like to see indoor recreation opportunities in Brampton opened up as soon as possible? We had 35% of people answer yes, 39% answer no, and 26% not sure at this time. Again, thank you very much for your feedback on these three polls this evening. We really do value your feedback and your input on how we move forward in navigating this COVID emergency. Our next question now comes from Darlene. Darlene, if you're there, go ahead with the question, please.
Yes, good evening, panel, and Patrick Brown. And I hope you had a good anniversary. I remember you were running about 7:30, and you said you had to go. So I hope you had a nice anniversary dinner. My question is, going to the grocery store, they're starting to have a couple of spikes in the grocery store with COVID-19 with the employees. And I want to know what the risks are. And because they do tell you that when it happened and now they're removed and so on. So I just want to know that risk. And one other quick question. I had an pneumonia shot. Would I need a flu shot as well, or should it be fine? Thank you. Have a good evening, everybody.
Well, Darlene, I'll have Dr. Lowe answer your questions there about those stores testing positive and the shots you asked about. And thank you for the anniversary wishes. I did leave our last teletown hall early to go to our wedding anniversary dinner, and it must be working out because we're having another one on the way in April. So my wife must still like me because our family is growing. But thank you for the good wishes, Dr. Lowe.
Thanks, Mayor Brown. Thanks, Darlene, for the question. You know, it's really fortunate. And one of the things that the closures and curtailments did in the spring was not only to build us time to build up capacity, get things under control, teach the population, all of you, around precautions. It also gave us an opportunity to study this virus a bit more. And so one thing that was identified in early March was transient contact, meaning if you're just passing someone, if you're just, you know, briefly exchanging something at arm's length. Transient contact does not seem to spread the virus. And so what we've discovered, especially over time, is that really it's one of the highest risks for transmission is the three C's, closed spaces, crowded spaces, and close contact. And it has to be for a prolonged time. So usually you're looking at 10, 15 minutes, you're sitting there. So this is why you're seeing stuff with social gatherings. You're seeing stuff with households. We're seeing stuff with dinners, and especially workplaces where precautions aren't being taken. People are sitting next to each other for hours and basically exchanging respiratory droplets. Also large parties that are in enclosed dark spaces. So while, you know, and this is where going back to the transparency and disclosure question that was there, for a workplace, especially if they have a policy in place for them to work with their employees, it's a matter of occupational health. If they choose to disclose, then that's absolutely appropriate for them to do so. It's the same way that a family doctor wouldn't necessarily disclose a patient's diagnosis, but it's okay for a patient to disclose that they have a diagnosis if they choose to do so. But I think the thing for you to know is that if you haven't heard from public health, if our contact tracers haven't called you and said, hey, you've been exposed, or you haven't seen a public notice from Peel Public Health saying everyone who's been at X, you know, facility during this time needs to get isolated and tested and call public health ASAP, then you can assume that whatever you're seeing posted on the grocery store likely did not result in exposure to you. Many times it may be a staff case. You don't know who that staff was. Maybe they were working in the back office. Maybe they were just working in a department and you didn't actually pass by them or even encounter them in the course of your stores. But the thing that you should be looking out for is hearing from public health saying, hey, look, you need to isolate, get tested, or if you're hearing a public notice. Another thing you can also do if you have a smartphone is download the COVID Alert app. That will actually allow you, particularly if someone else has the COVID Alert app and tests positive, to be notified more quickly while public health and our contact tracing is getting to you. So I wanted to clarify that. It's usually close contact, crowded, confined spaces. That's where we're seeing a lot of spread. Transient contact, as long as you're taking the usual precautions of 2 meters and limiting numbers and wearing a mask, you should be reducing your risk pretty well on that case. So I hope that answers your question. I'll pass it back to the chief.
Great. Thank you very much, Darlene and Dr. Lowe. We're going to go now to our next caller, which is Diane. Diane, if you're there, go ahead with your question, please.
Yes, it's for the doctor. And by the way, Mayor Brown, the COVID must have been good to you, seeing ones on the way. First of all, I'd like to make a comment. Them first two callers, if they feel like going out and getting COVID in a restaurant, let them get a bubble in their backyard and chair and wine and enjoy themselves. I don't want it. I don't want COVID. We'll be wearing masks at least for another year or maybe longer. I want to be safe, and they should have the respect to respect us elders. Now, to get back to me, I have never taken the flu shot. I'm 72, and I'm, to be honest with you, I'm very afraid to take the flu shot. I do have medical conditions, and I don't know what's in that vaccine, which I guess I'm not going to know what's in the vaccine for the virus. Hopefully it will come, which I know it won't be coming for a while. But anyway, that was my question. Dr. Lowe, are you washing your hands? Lord, I wash every Wednesday. You got me doing it. Every time you take your mask off.
I have nothing to say, Dr. Lowe. I'll pass it to you. Thank you.
Chief Boyce, thank you. And Diane, thank you so much for making sure you're washing your hands. And when I'm taking my mask off, that's the proper procedure. Make sure your hands are clean, take your mask off, and technically you're supposed to wash your hands again afterwards. But because I'm making sure that I'm just holding on to the mask, I'm usually trying to make sure that I'm donning and doffing appropriately. You know, your concerns around the flu shot and never having had it before are certainly very common. And I think a lot of people who've never had the flu shot before are really asking this question this year. The most important thing to know is that the flu shot is safe and effective. There is a significant approval process that goes into the development of these vaccines from year to year. There's additional tests on their effectiveness and their safety. And really the most important thing for you to know is that while there may be mild side effects, I actually just got my flu shot today, so you may have a little bit of a sore arm, you may have a mild fever, that's essentially your body priming itself to fight off the real influenza if it actually shows up. So to the extent, especially if you're in a high-risk group as you are, you might want to get the flu shot. I think I would encourage that. And Dr. Martino, I know you still practice clinically, so maybe there's sort of the clinician's touch that you could add to this conversation with our friend Diane.
Thank you, Lawrence. And Diane, thank you for your question. And It's not an unusual question. In fact, that question is often asked by patients. I've never had it, so I don't think I need it. In fact, you do. And as you get older, you probably need it more than when you were younger. You had indicated you have multiple other health conditions that put you at increased risk. I got my flu shot yesterday, and I do every year, and I'm a firm believer that it protects me. Dr. Lowe is correct. It is very safe. One of the most safe inventions, and one of the safest procedures we provide as physicians to our patients. And you know, it is a needle, and people don't. Some have needle phobia, and some are afraid of needles. But it's an instant of pain for a total season of safety and security. So it's your insurance. Please use it.
Great, thank you very much, Diane, for the question, and then for the doctors. That was that provides some humor tonight. That was very much appreciated. We're going now to our next caller, which is Selena. Selena, if you're there, go ahead with your question.
Hi, thank you for taking my question tonight. It's more of a concern, actually. An aunt of mine was scheduled for heart surgery in Toronto, and she was instructed by the hospital to have a COVID test 3 to 4 days before the actual surgery. This was at the time when Shoppers Drug Mart was opening up for COVID tests, and she contacted three of them, and she was rejected by all three. They told her that they could not conduct the test for her, and they didn't give her any answers as to why. She then, you know, panicked, and I helped her find, you know, a place to get the testing done just in time. But even then, there was a concern that we wouldn't get the results in time for her surgery because she needs to know the results. Has protocol changed at Shoppers Drug Mart that we're not aware of, or are they properly, are they set up properly to take patients that have no symptoms, and she just needed the COVID test for surgery? She had no symptoms.
Thank you very much, Selena, for the question. I'll pass it over to Dr. Martino and or Dr. Lowe.
I'm happy to take. Go ahead, Frank.
So at Osler, both our oncology and surgical patients are not asked to self-book for a COVID-19 test at this time. Their test bookings will continue to be coordinated by the hospital and the program that they're receiving their treatment in. I know we understand that a number of the downtown hospitals, especially when it comes to cardiovascular surgery, are requesting their patients to have a test and identify that they have a negative test before they have the procedure or the surgery. There is some science here. We know that patients who have an underlying COVID diagnosis, maybe asymptomatic, have a greater morbidity and sometimes a negative outcome to their surgery, and that is why there is this push to get testing. There is some debate over this, and I'm going to let Lawrence speak to that. If you really do need the test to have the surgery, we encourage you to actually call our testing center and book an appointment, and that this is for those on the call who are going to have surgery in the weeks or months to come. Book an appointment, indicate to the person who is taking your appointment for a scheduled COVID test. They'll also advise you on where to attain your results. There are multiple ways to attain results through your family physician on the provincial portal and at Osler through MyChart. That way you can get those test results to your surgeon or to the surgical program in Toronto that's requesting the testing. Again, the phone number for that test to book a test, our call center number is 905-487-1249.
Thank you very much, Dr. Martino. I'm not sure, Dr. Lowe, if you had anything to add to that.
No, I would just quickly add, since I think this is a hospital in Toronto, if you're having trouble getting a pre-op test, you should call them and advise them of that and see what arrangements they might have for you. In respect of Shoppers Drug Mart, from what I understand from our provincial partners who run the testing, there are targeted testing initiatives that allow people to qualify for Shoppers Drug Mart tests. I think that guidance is all available online at ontario.ca/coronavirus. And if you have any questions on the targeted testing program, Ontario Health is actually the agency that would be best place to explain who might be eligible.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe. And we have time for one more question tonight before we wrap up. And that question goes to Madeline. Madeline, if you're there, go ahead with your question, please.
Hi. I'm just wondering, I've been tested and I was negative, thankfully. How often should we be getting tested?
Thank you very much, Madeline, for the question. And I'll pass that over to Dr. Lowe.
Thank you.
Thanks, Madeline. Thanks, Chief Boys. At this point in time, we're only recommending testing for individuals who are symptomatic with symptoms that are consistent with COVID-19, who have been exposed to someone with COVID-19 but maybe asymptomatic or been directed by public health to get tested, and then also people who are part of a targeted testing initiative, such as, you know, people who need to visit a long-term care home, international students, et cetera. So there's a clear list. You can visit peelregion.ca/coronavirus to find some information on testing criteria, and also ontario.ca/coronavirus for the provincial requirements on who can get tested. So, Chief, I may have bought you some time. I don't know.
Great job, Dr. Lowe, as always. And everyone, that is all the time that we do have today, and we do thank you for joining us. We will have another town hall in 3 weeks. And again, as always, if you'd like more information, please check out the Region Appeals website, along with the City of Brampton's website. There's a ton of great information there with respect to COVID. I'm going to pass it over to Mayor Brown to wrap up.
Well, thank you, Chief Boys, and so many great questions tonight. And thank you, Dr. Martino and Dr. Lowe, for taking the time to answer an hour and a half of questions. I wish, you know, to answer every question, we probably had to be here 4 or 5 hours. And I just looking at the screen, other ones we didn't get to. You know, when are the speed limits coming? The speed cameras. A number of them have already been installed, and they will be installed in every community safety zone across the city. So if you're speeding, watch out. You're going to get a big, fat, expensive ticket. So don't speed. Lots of great questions like that, and I hope. I hope in future town halls we'll be able to answer more questions. You can always email me at mayorbrown@brampton.ca if there's a pressing question you want an answer to right away. I can refer it to Dr. Martino or Dr. Lowe. And everyone, you know, do your best to stay safe in the days and weeks ahead. Stay healthy. Listen to the advice of Peel Public Health. And pass on the news tonight about our Halloween costume contest to win a life-size chocolate bar. We're going to make sure that we can still celebrate special events in Brampton, even with this new COVID environment. We're going to be having a virtual Remembrance Day celebration that we are already shooting. We're going to have a very special virtual celebration that people can watch online. And we're going to continue to think creatively of how we can get through this year. And so I know in time we're going to look back at this period and say we got through COVID. We will get through it as a city and as a country. It's only a matter of time. Be patient and just stay healthy during this period. Thank you so much.
Have a good night. Thank you.